Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, it's Levi Page. Trisha Griffith is having some problems with her internet connection, but she should be on now. We're going to discuss the sentencing of Chris Watts, who was sentenced today for killing his pregnant wife, Shannon, and his two daughters, Bella and Celeste, one three-year-old and the other a four-year-old. He was sentenced to life in prison after pleading not guilty. Let's go to our guest. I think we have a guest that is caller 443. Are you there? Area code 443.
I am, and it's Katie, and I spoke last time, so I'm going to listen.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Thanks for calling. I'll put you back on hold. All right, guys, we're waiting for Trisha Griffith to call in. She's having internet problems. Hopefully all the other guests that we're going to be on will call back in as well. Again, I'm Levi Page, and we're going to talk about what happened today at the sentencing of Chris Watts. And I want to apologize for the technical difficulties, but we're going to power through this. So Chris Watts pled guilty after claiming that he didn't murder his two children, that his wife, Shannon, who is 15 weeks pregnant, is the one that murdered their children, and he killed her in a fit of rage. However, prosecutors say that was not the case, and they laid out a lot of the evidence against Chris Watts in court today. It was premeditated, it was calculated, and it was deliberate, and that this was planned. And he wanted to start over with his mistress. They have evidence that he was planning a vacation with his mistress, that he was buying his mistress jewelry. And right after he killed his daughters, when he was claiming they were missing, guess what he was doing? He called the school and de-enrolled them from school and was on the phone with a real estate agent trying to sell the home. I think Trisha Griffith is with us now. Hey, Trisha, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you,
hello?
Trisha.
Oh, my
God. We're
gosh.
On the air.
I apologize, everybody. This apparently was the time that my Linksys decided I needed a new password, and they asked for the old one. Now, that's like 2 years old. I have no idea. And then it said, try and find the factory settings. I have no idea. So I was having a nervous breakdown, and Levi offered to step in. So thank you, Levi. Levi, I have some cuts if you look in the studio, and you'll see one that says Frank, and I'm not quite sure what else it says. It says, do you see the one that says Frank?
This is Shannon's father. We want to play it?
Yes. Go ahead and play it. This is part of his victim impact statement.
You monster. Thought you would get away with this. I don't know how. The cameras do not lie. You carry them out like trash of the house. Yes. I seen the videotape. You buried my daughter Shannon and Nico in a shallow grave. And then you put Bella and Celeste in huge containers of crude oil. You heartless monster. You have to live with this vision every day of your life, and I hope you see that every time you close your eyes at night. Oh, I forgot. You have no heart or feelings or love. Let me tell you something. I will think of them every day of my life, and I love them every day of my life. Prison is too good for you. This is hard to say, but may God have mercy on your soul. I hope you enjoy your new life. It's nothing like the one you had out here. May the courts have no mercy on you. It's hard every day. It hurts in so many ways. I have heard people say that you're not a monster. No, you are not. You're an evil monster. Thank you. Love you, Shannon, Bella, and Nico. Love you, Pop Up and Dad. And one other thing. And Shannon says, She is super excited for justice today. Thank you.
And Levi, if you can see right beneath that, I believe it says Chris Watts' mother, and it's a longer one. It's like 4 minutes. Can you hit that one too, please?
Okay, this is Cindy Watts, Chris Watts' mother, and let's listen to this.
My name is Cindy Watts. I am the grandmother of two beautiful granddaughters, Bella Marie, Celeste Catherine Watts. I am also the mother of Christopher Watts, who I will be directing most of my statement to. First, I'd like to begin by recognizing the absolute horror of this crime and acknowledging the devastating loss that both the Rusek family as well as our family have faced. Our families have been irreparably broken by the needless deaths of Shanann, Bella, Cece, and Nico. This is something we will never get over. We will always mourn the loss of our family, and in that, we are united in our grief. I am still struggling to understand how and why this tragedy occurred. I may never be able to understand and accept it, but I pray for peace and healing for all of us. Now to my son, Christopher. I have known you since the day you were born into this world. I have watched you grow from a quiet and sweet, curious child who Bella reminded me so much of, to a young man who worked hard in sports and later mechanics to achieve your goals. You are a good friend, brother, father, and son. We have loved you from the beginning, and we still love you now. This might be hard for some to understand how I can sit here under these circumstances and tell you, although we are heartbroken, although we can't imagine what could have led us to this day, but we love you. Maybe you can't believe it either. As the Lord said in Jeremiah 3:31, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. And you, as your mother, Chris, I have always loved you, and I still do. I hate what has happened. Your father and sister and I are struggling to understand why. But we will remain faithful as your family, just as God remains faithful because of his unconditional love for us all. We love you. And we forgive you, son.
Okay, and one more actuality, one more media soundbite, and this one is so compelling. It's from the DA, and Levi, I think it's right below there. It's right toward the bottom.
Your Honor, there are no words to adequately describe the unimaginable tragedy that brings us before this court today. By my comments, I'm not even going to try to express the horror, the pain, or the suffering that the defendant has caused to these families, to this community, and to all who are a part of this investigation. However, I do want to spend a few minutes sharing with the court the details of the crime, as so far you've only had an opportunity to review the affidavit and a few facts here and there that have been offered to the court in the motions and pleadings that have been filed. The questions that have screamed out to anyone who will listen since August 13th of 2018 are why and how. Why did this have to happen? How could a seemingly normal husband and father annihilate his entire family? For what? These are the questions that only one individual in this courtroom or on this planet knows the answers to. I fully expect we will not receive the answers to these questions today, nor will we at any point in the future. I don't expect that he will ever tell the truth about what truly happened or why. Even if he did, there is no rational way that any human being could find those answers acceptable responses to such horrific questions. The best we can do is try to piece together some kind of understanding from the evidence that is available to us. And the evidence tells us this. The defendant coldly and deliberately ended four lives. Not in a fit of rage, not by way of accident, but in a calculated and sickening manner. Shanann was 34 years old. She had married the defendant in November of 2012. Over the weekend leading up to August 13th, she had been at a work conference in Phoenix, Arizona, and returned home in the early morning hours of August 13th. We know that she got home about 1:45 in the morning. The doorbell camera on their home shows her arriving back home from the airport. Shortly thereafter, at least according to the defendant, they had what he referred to as an emotional conversation about the state of their marriage and about what their lives would look like going forward. What was said during that emotional conversation, only he knows. What we do know is that shortly after that, the defendant strangled her to death with his own hands. We know that he slowly took her life the morning of August 13th. We know that this was not done in an uncontrolled, vengeful manner that he tried to describe to agents from CBI and the FBI. If that were the case, you would expect to see vicious, horrible bruising about her neck, shoulders, and face. You would expect to see the hyoid bone in her neck broken. You would expect to see some kind of defensive wounds on his body as she struggled and fought for her own life. None of those are present. The only injuries that were on Shanann's body were one set of bruising, what appeared to be fingernail or finger mark bruising to the right side of her neck. We know that our experts will tell us that it takes 2 to 4 minutes to strangle someone to death manually with their own hands. The horror that she felt as the man that she loved wrapped his hands around her throat and choked the life out of her must have been unimaginable. Even worse, what must Bella, age 4, and Celeste, age 3, must have experienced or thought as their father, the one man on this planet who was supposed to nurture and protect them, was snuffing out their lives. They both died from smothering. Let me say that again. The man seated to my right smothered his daughters. Why? Imagine the horror in Bella's mind as her father took her last breaths away. Your Honor, understand very clearly, Bella fought back for her life. The frenulum, the connective tissue between her upper lip and her gum, had a centimeter and a half laceration. She bit her tongue multiple times before she died. She fought back for her life as her father smothered her. Celeste had no such injuries. In fact, she had no external injuries at all. But according to the medical examiner, she was smothered nonetheless. The defendant then methodically and calmly loaded their bodies into his work truck, not in a hasty or disorganized way. He was seen from the neighbor's doorbell camera, backing his truck into the driveway, going back and forth into the house and back out to the truck 3 different times, one time for each of their bodies. He then drove them away from their family home one final time, intent on hiding any evidence of the crimes that he had just committed. In one final sign of callousness for his wife, his daughters, and their unborn son, and their remains, he drove them to a location that he thought no one would ever find them, to one of the oil tank batteries with which he was so familiar. He knew this was safe. He had texted a coworker the night before saying, "I'll head out to that site. I'll take care of it." He had carefully ensured that he would be alone in the middle of the plains to secrete away the remains of his family in a place that he hoped they would never be found. In one final measure of disrespect for the family he once had, he ensured that they would not be together, even in death, or so he thought. He disposed of them in different locations. He buried Shanann and Nico in a shallow grave away from the oil tanks. Bella and Celeste were thrown away in the oil tanks at this facility. Different tanks, so these little girls wouldn't be together in death. Imagine this, Your Honor. This defendant took those little girls and put them through a hatch at the top of an oil tank, 8 inches in diameter. Bella had scratches on her left buttocks from being shoved through this hole. A tuft of blonde hair was found on the edge of one of these hatches. The defendant told investigators that Bella's tank seemed emptier than Cece's because of the sound that the splashes made. These were his daughters. Significantly, when his co-workers arrived at the tank battery later that morning, to a person, they all described him as acting completely normally. It was a normal work day, even while his daughter sank in the oil and water not far away from him. And then his efforts at deception truly began. We've all seen the emotionless interviews that the defendant gives to the local media, asking for help in locating his family. We watched as he claimed that the house was empty without them, and that he hoped that they were somewhere safe, and that he just wanted them to come home. He told investigators that they were at home sleeping when he left for work that morning, and that Shanann had told him that she was taking the girls to a friend's house for the day. What is striking about this case, Your Honor, beyond the horrors that I've already described to you, is the number of collateral victims that he created by his actions. While he stood in front of TV cameras asking for the safe return of his family, scores of law enforcement officers, neighbors, friends and family scoured the area, fretted for their safe return. They texted him begging for any information and sending him their best wishes, all the while he hid what he had done. The list of indirect victims does not end there. Think of the firefighters and the Colorado State Patrol hazmat experts who had to don protective suits and who were called upon to pull Bella and Celeste out of those oil tanks. Or the coroner employees who had to conduct these autopsies. Or the victim assistants who frantically attempted to ease the suffering of those affected. All of this, Your Honor, for what? Why? Why did this have to happen? His motive was simple, Your Honor. He had a desire for a fresh start. To begin a relationship with a new love that overpowered all decency and feelings for his wife, his daughters, and unborn son. While Shanann texted the defendant over and over again in the days and weeks leading up to her death, attempting to save her marriage, the defendant secreted pictures of his girlfriend into his phone and texted her at all hours of the night. While Shanann sent the defendant self-help and relationship counseling books, one of which, ironically enough, was thrown in the garbage. He was searching the internet for secluded vacation spots to take his new love in researching jewelry. And while Shanann took the girls to visit family in North Carolina, the defendant went to car museums and the sand dunes with his new girlfriend. The stark contrast between the subjects of their internet and text content is absolutely stunning. Even the morning after he killed them and disposed of their bodies, he made several phone calls. One was to the school where the girls were supposed to start, telling the school that the girls would not be coming to school anymore, that they were being unenrolled, presumably to give him some more time before law enforcement notification about them going missing. He contacted a realtor to start discussing the selling of his house, and he texted with his girlfriend about their future. None of this answers the questions of why, however. If he was this happy and wanted a new start, get a divorce. You don't annihilate your family and throw them away like garbage. Why did Nico, Celeste, Bella, and Shanann have to lose their lives in order for him to get what he wanted? Your Honor, justice demands the maximum sentence under the agreement reached by the parties. As you will recall, the agreement calls for life sentences as to Shanann, Bella, and Celeste, and all of those to run consecutively to one another. It also calls for the count of unlawful termination of a pregnancy as to Nico to run consecutively to counts 1, 2, and 3. I would suggest that the extreme aggravation present in the defendant's conduct and in the efforts that I have described mandate that the sentences for counts 7, 8, and 9, the tampering with a deceased human body, each be the maximum of 12 years, and that those sentences run consecutively to one another. It is very clear that each of these acts, that these were not the subject of one act, but each oil tank that he walked up with his daughter's bodies and the hole that he dug for his wife and unborn son mandate a mandatory consecutive sentence. It's been alluded to this morning, but the defendant was certainly eligible for the death penalty in this case under the existing law in the state of Colorado. As you heard, Shanann's family strongly opposed my office seeking the death penalty and being bound to the criminal justice system for the next several decades. That's in large part, as you've heard, why we have reached the agreement that we have. Four lives were lost at the hands of the defendant on August 13th for reasons that we will never fully understand, nor will we know. In the end, the Rusick family was much more merciful towards him than he was towards his wife, his daughters, and his unborn son. Prison for the remainder of his life is exactly where he belongs for murdering his entire family. Thank you.
Are you seeking 91 days to file a request for restitution?
I am, Your Honor, please.
I'll grant that request.
Boy, Levi, that is some very intense, just a little snippets, believe it or not, even though that last media bite was pretty long, but those are really little snippets of what everybody got to see today. And I find it interesting that Chris's parents have finally said what everybody knows, and that is their son is responsible. Somebody must have sat them down and had a come to Jesus meeting with them, because they changed their whole outlook, don't you think?
Yes, and he refused to look at his mother in the eyes when she was reading her statement in court today. I think that
right.
was very telling as well.
It really was. And also, and I've said this last week, I firmly believe he wasn't killing Shanann. He was killing Mom. Mom is going to be like Jackie Peterson, in my opinion, a very controlling, this was her golden boy, the youngest child. There's quite a bit of age difference between himself and his sister, so this was her baby. And remember, in fact, I think I have that actuality there. It's 7 seconds long, and it's Chris's mom. Do you see it there?
Yes.
Go ahead and play that.
All right.
My name is Cindy Watts. I am the grandmother of two beautiful granddaughters, Bella Marie, Celeste Catherine Watts. I am also...
That's the wrong one. It's up toward the top. It's 7 seconds long. Do you see it?
Okay, Tricia, you don't have anything on here.
There's nothing there? There's not
with
a seven
that.
Second actuality?
No.
Well, I'm sorry.
There's
I have no idea what happened.
Cindy Watts, we forgive you that we played earlier, and then there's the one that I was about to play.
And that's it? There's nothing more at the top of it?
No.
Well, I don't know what happened, but let me tell you what that actuality said. She says, what happened to Chris? Shanann happened to Chris. That's what happened. They were still blaming Shanann for this horrific, horrific crime. And there are so many things going around, Levi. I want to tell you what somebody sent me today. Somebody sent me the supposed letter that Chris wrote and told his sister to keep. I'm sorry, it is the phoniest looking thing. That's why I didn't put it up on Web Sleuth. It's so damn phony. And if it was real, Levi, they would give it to the prosecutor, right?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Yeah, exactly. And actually joining us tonight is Little Texan. And Little Texans, thank you so much. We had some kind of very emergency type things happen. Hatana 1 had an emergency with a client, and we had a surprise guest, and it was a baby butterfly, and she had an emergency that she had to take care of. So hopefully we can have her on next week. She is a friend of Shanann's, and actually she just knew her through one of the clubs that they belong to on the internet, and she can comment on Shanann's personality. Now, the Thayers, the neighbors that took Chris in, the nights that after the girls and his wife went missing. I thought they were going to be on tonight, but when I talked to Mr. Thayer yesterday, he told me that Shanann's mom had asked everybody just to back off the interviews and kind of let it die down for a bit. So he said, out of respect to her, she is not going to come on. And I think that's it. It's Levi and Little Texans is here. Hi, Little Texans.
Hi.
I'm so glad you made it. It was a very bizarre night. That's all I can say. Very strange. And tell us what the feeling on the forum is. We certainly haven't heard very much from people who thought Chris was innocent on websleuth.com, right? It's now kind of just all the people saying what everybody knew from a long time ago.
Yes, there's a overwhelming feeling of sadness. And I think tonight it's shifting a little more to anger, which seems likely what would happen. And I think that also people, the ones who were defending Chris, we didn't have too many anyway on WebSleuth, but I mean, what could they really say at this point? The details are horrifying. They're probably worse than most people thought they were going to be. So I think we have a lot of sense of just sadness, of people wanting to hug their own kids, of trying to be kind to others. One thing I think it's really nice is a lot of posters are sort of sharing what they feel they've learned from Shanann, from all of that social media she had and just the way she seemed to live her life sort of fearlessly, and what can they take from that to put into their own lives, maybe some positivity that they can put out into the universe, basing their lives on Shanann and forgetting about Chris.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and let's hope that people can do that, people close to her. I did talk to a couple of her friends today, and they said it's a very emotional day, very intense day, and they just still can't believe that life force, that Shanann is no longer here. It's so hard for them to grasp. Hey, Levi, do you have any thoughts or anything before we kind of change the subject slightly?
Yes, I just want to say that it is a very sad day to learn that a woman that was 15 weeks pregnant was snuffed out. And I'm just wondering, what exactly did she know? Did she know that her husband was planning on leaving her? The prosecutor alluded to an emotionally charged conversation, but on social media she was talking about how she loved Chris. So what did she know? We do know that she was aware that there was something kinky going on because she was getting text alerts on her cell phone about Chris Watts taking somebody, buying dinner for two, with his mistress out in Denver while she was away. So she had to be aware of something, but what exactly did she know? And the fact that she was snuffed out when she was pregnant is just horrible. And those little girls, what they went through, just thinking about the horror. I mean, this is their own father that they loved, someone that they count on to protect them, and here he is, the perpetrator, harming them, abusing them, and killing them, and then so callously calling and de-enrolling them from school. While he was claiming they were missing, they weren't missing, he killed them. That's why he was de-enrolling them from school. And the motive to start all over with his mistress, it's sickening.
It really is sickening.
And all of the people that were trying to make Shanann the bad guy, Tricia, they have egg on their face. And I've noticed that a lot of them have gone silent. And the Murder Rap Sesh podcast has changed their name on Twitter, and they say they're moving on to another case. How convenient at this time that they're doing it.
Exactly, and that's my next topic that we're going to talk about, because a lot of people on WebSleuth really wanted to explore this. Now, this is a perfect example of the internet gone wild, just saying whatever you want and portraying it as the truth. Now, it's a very convoluted very mixed up kind of situation, and I'm going to have Little Texans help me kind of untangle it. But basically, they had this special that they said they had, you know, inside information. And so I'm listening, and most of the time, I swear, it was spent talking about, I have inside sources, and they come to me. Let's everybody understand, they come to me. They were just patting them on their backs just constantly. And part of the information that they had was that Shanann's body was in bad shape. It was beat up and broken, and there were bruises everywhere. Well, now we know that there wasn't. There was nothing like that. But they put that out there as fact. And Little Texans, help me here, because you help me understand this and untangle it all the time. Did they fire one of the ladies, or what's going on?
Well, I thank you for taking that one for the team. What, listening to that emergency podcast,
yes,
I just couldn't do another one that particular day. I think I'd already listened to three, and it was like I could feel my brain cells dying. But at any rate, but we have some wonderful, wonderful members on Web Sleuths who were taking it for the team as well and did listen to it. And so I actually got a lot of the information from you and a lot of the information from our great posters who suffered through that and then posted about it and then alerted us to let us know that Radar Online had picked up their facts from that emergency session. What I've heard since from reading what our members have to say is that my understanding, and maybe someone will call in and let us know, is that Kay fired Jay, the one host, I guess, sort of fired the other, accusing her of taking money or taking the money. I'm not sure if she actually got money for the Radar Online story. But then I think today one of our posters said that now one host is reaching out to reconcile. So I don't know if it's the one who accused the other one or the one who was basically fired. And they just changed their profile picture to some strange bitmoji of an angry woman with flames behind her on Facebook. So I can't even speak to that because I don't know what that is supposed to signify. I hope it's not yet another dig at Shanann, but with these people, I really don't know.
Yeah, they were pretty, in my opinion, pretty cruel to Shanann, and it was absolutely disgusting. And here's the thing, Levi and Little Texans, these people on this podcast got incredible publicity. I mean, I've never seen a podcast shoot up like that, but it was all based on just a bunch of crap. And, you know, you had one of them writing that letter to the judge saying that Mrs. Watts, Chris's mom, should talk to Chris. I mean, who the hell does that? And anyway, it was just it was bad. It was really bad. And it gave podcasts a bad name, you know. And
it did.
It did, Levi. I mean, Levi, you run a very intelligent and very honest podcast. Didn't it just kind of make your stomach do flips and you just wanted to throw up?
It did. And the fact that in the beginning, before they even did an episode, they got a lot of heat from people because they ripped off another very popular podcast called My Favorite Murder. They took their name and used it as their own and claimed that they didn't know that it about the other podcast. Well, it's a very popular podcast, and if you didn't know about it, all you had to do is type the name into Google, and that would have popped up there because it's extremely popular. And the fact that they did that is really shows how unethical they are. And then the trashing of Shanann is it takes it to an entire new level, because this is a victim here. It's one thing to say, you know what, we're going to wait for the facts to emerge and we're not going to condemn Chris Watts just yet. But it's quite another to make insinuations about the character of a dead woman who is not on this earth to defend herself any longer and cast negative aspersions about her, claiming that she was too controlling, she wore the pants, and somehow, because she was, you know, an outspoken person, vivacious, that means that she got what was coming to her. I mean, that's, excuse my language, but that kind of behavior, you know, the bitch got what's coming to her, is something that you would expect from a caveman, not people
exactly.
in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And Tricia, we have a caller, and if you want to call in, the number is 713-955-0606. When you call in, make sure you press 1 if you want to talk to the host, and we'll get you on the air to talk about the Chris Watts case. And we're sorry for all the technical problems. Trisha's internet went down, so I'm taking over the calls tonight. So have a call, Trisha, from area code 303.
Well,
if you're on
that
the air.
Like Colorado.
It does.
Yes.
Area code 303, are you there?
You're on the air.
Hello? Area code 303. I guess they're
shy. They don't want to talk.
Well, they're terrified. When they hear me, they're like, oh, my God, no. Anyway, so, Levi, I want to ask you about the iTunes and being removed from that. That's a big deal, right? I mean,
yeah,
when you're
so
removed.
If you want to do a podcast, iTunes is a very popular place where a lot of people listen to their podcast. And
mm-hmm.
I only know of another person that's gotten removed from iTunes, and it was Alex Jones, the controversial conspiracy theorist
wow.
who was going after the families
mm-hmm.
of the Sandy Hook massacre. He
mm-hmm.
was harassing them, and they some of those victims' families have had to move because he's basically saying that they made all this up or that they're actors and they're trying to take everybody's guns away. And people have showed up to those victims' homes after listening to Alex Jones rant about them and were protesting outside their home or harassing them. So
mm-hmm.
iTunes removed him. That's the only other podcast that I know of that iTunes has actually removed them from their Apple Podcasts app. So that's pretty big that they were removed.
It is. Now, they are saying that they're just having some difficulties, right, Little Texans? They've said that they're trying to straighten it out. Did they say technical difficulties?
yeah.
Once your podcast is on iTunes, it's on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
You don't have technical difficulties.
It's ridiculous. I didn't even think that made sense, and I don't know the technicalities of how all of this works, but it
mm-hmm.
didn't ring true when they said the other day, oh, we're just having some issues where we've got a support ticket in to Apple. Well, I think they'll be waiting forever for that support ticket to be answered to their satisfaction, frankly.
Exactly.
So,
well,
yeah, it'll be a long wait.
And this is a good example of why people should be very careful of what they hear on the internet, especially if it's sensational. Now, remember, these people were reporting things that nobody else had, and supposedly it came from their sources. Well, look how wrong their sources have been every step of the way. But people believe them. They even got on, I think it was HLN or somewhere.
They were on HLN, yeah.
Yeah, where they were everywhere. Again, it's just because they had all this sensational, supposedly verified news, and none of it was. So take it with a grain of salt, especially if somebody comes on and they're brand new, and all of a sudden they have more information than Levi Page or, you know, somebody from CNN. That's a big red flag right there. It really is. So just do keep that in mind and stick to the ethical podcast, Levi Page, Levi Page, Levi Page. So anyway, Levi, this case has really gripped the nation. Actually, it's worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, I think the reason why it so gripped the nation and the world was, and I think this is true with almost every big case, why do they turn into a big case? I think this turned into a big case for several reasons. Number one, where they were found. Actually, number one would be the first interview that Chris Watts gave, and it was just flat. He wasn't the least bit worried. He had weird body language. He was kind of rocking back and forth. Very strange. That caught a lot of people's attention. And so everybody almost, said, look at that guy. That's weird. Well, then they find out where he put his wife and his daughters. I've never heard of anybody disposing a body like that, let alone your daughters. So don't you think on a case like this, it's almost the backstory of what happened and these little bits of information. Now I believe his mother, Cindy Watts, will be part of this equation. If anybody decides to write a book, they'll go to Cindy Watts and they will learn an awful lot. And when they say they didn't see anything growing up, he was fine, he wasn't. He wasn't fine. They must have missed the clues that he had rage inside of him. He had such uncontrollable rage that it finally popped. You can only keep it in so long. And again, like I said at the beginning, in my opinion, I think he was symbolically killing his mother. That's just my armchair psychologist opinion. Little Texans, what do you think? Do you think that's true?
Oh, yes, absolutely. If they miss signs, it's because they have probably passed a lot of this disordered thinking, whatever it may be, down to him. You have to have self-awareness before you can have understanding of someone else. And if there's one thing that his mother has shown throughout this entire past few weeks since we've really heard from her, is a complete lack of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I mean, just doesn't even seem to have any clue how she came across. I know, Tricia, you and I talked about, as parents, first of all, you'd think you'd be just horrified in general and maybe crying or something. But also, she didn't ever really point the finger back at herself. It was always, gee, what could have missed? But it wasn't mm-hmm. like, did I do something wrong? We've seen a lot of parents of murderers who will say, maybe I did something wrong.
Right.
Never have I heard her say that. I don't think it would even dawn on her that she could have done something wrong when parenting
that caused such rage in there. Levi, I'm sorry. I think I interrupted you. You were about to say something.
Well, she didn't even go to his wedding with Shannon.
Right.
She refused to go. And I think that speaks volumes about how she was like, pissed off and out in the corner mm-hmm. with her fingers crossed, angry while everybody else was at the wedding. That shows you how controlling mm-hmm. she is. And she was, pouting mm-hmm. because she didn't get her way. She didn't want Chris to marry Shannon. And I compared it in the last podcast that we did together, Tricia, to Norman Bates. I know it's a fictional character, mm-hmm. but that's just what this reminds me of, a controlling mother
yeah.
and a crazy son that is crazy mm-hmm. and has a mm-hmm. mother that drives him crazy. And I think that could factor into this case. But another thing that I wanted to mention, Tricia, is you mentioned the way he disposed of his body in these oil tanks where he worked. I don't think that's just something that you come up with at the snap of a finger. I think that shows the amount of planning that he planned this crime, and he thought that this was the perfect place to hide a body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think you're right. I think he planned it for a long
time. And if he didn't lead them there, would police have been able to locate the bodies? That's a big question.
That. Nobody. Not until those oil tankers were emptied, and maybe they wouldn't have been emptied for 10 years. We don't know. And that's what he thought he could get away with it. I firmly believe that he went to work and still had to do some cleanup. And when when her friend, Nicole, couldn't find Shannon, she kept calling him and saying, call the police, call the police. He's like, no. They just went away for a little bit. And then so she says, well, I'm calling the police. Well, then he rushes home, and it's too late. The police are there. He can't clean up. I think his arrogance is what got him. And the fact that he can't read people, like you said, Little Texans, no self-awareness whatsoever. The fact that he thought he could get away with this is appalling because he's so bad at it. It reminds me a lot of Scott Peterson. there's lots of parallels to this case. And I hope somebody does write a book and really goes in depth and tells us about his childhood and what's going on. Like I said last week, I talked to somebody close to the family, and they were adamant. You know, Chris wouldn't do this. There's more to this story. There's so much more to this story. Well, I think what was more to this story was they thought Shannon was a horrible bitch, you know, and that that comment that his mother made, you know, what happened to Chris? Shannon happened to Chris. That, like you said, Levi, is so telling. Because not, oh gosh, you know, Chris felt a little bit of pressure from, you know, having his kids and I don't know what happened. No, Shannon, that's what happened. Again, she didn't go to their wedding. What mother doesn't go to their son's wedding because they're mad because they didn't get their way? They're mad at something. It's just, the whole thing is so appalling. And again, no self-awareness whatsoever. Oh my gosh, what a night, what a day. It's been very stressful to say the least. Not, you have to feel a lot for Shannon's family. They were heartbreaking in court today, and you just wanted to reach out and hug them and tell them, ask them, what can we do? What can we do? And I think what we can do is, like you said in the beginning, little Texans, is use Shannon's example of how to live an enthusiastic life, and she always was doing good. And I think we all can learn a lot from her. And I have a feeling that would really, really help their family quite a bit. But there, again, Shannon's brother, all of them, you just broke your heart. Right, little Texans? I mean, it was just so heartbreaking.
Yes. Her family has so much grace and dignity and class, and they're so articulate. And even in their statements, they were consoling the Watts family. I mean,
right.
That's incredibly selfless and
mm-hmm.
thoughtful, and no one would have blamed them if they hadn't done that. But it was
mm-hmm.
just that extra, you can see exactly why Shannon was such a lovely character and such a lovely person. Her family is incredible. And yeah, she lived out loud. And she was proud of it, and she was
mm-hmm.
cheerful. And I think there are a lot of lessons to be, a legacy to be left by her and by her gorgeous children. And her family just exemplified that in court. Just so dignified, so graceful. And just the fact that they begged for him they begged the DA not
mm-hmm.
to pursue the death penalty. They didn't just say, oh, we don't believe in it. We'd rather you didn't. He described it as begged. So I think the DA was really more than ready to go for the death penalty, even though
yes.
it hasn't been actually used in Colorado in a long time. But the family said, no, we absolutely do not want that, please. And, you know, they haven't gotten much say here. I mean, this happened to them. As much as Cindy Watts
mm-hmm.
says it happened to her, no, this happened
right.
to Shannon's family.
Yeah.
And for them to say, even in the face of that horrible grief and tragedy that they'll never get over, because you can't,
no.
they said, don't kill him. Don't kill
yeah,
him.
Yeah, that's right. Don't kill him. It's too much killing. Just too much
There's,
killing.
Yeah,
too much
death. And we're not going to make that choice to kill
mm-hmm.
him. And they know. I mean, they're very smart people. So they know that he'll have a life in prison. He'll probably have a pretty good life in prison. He'll probably get married.
I think he will too.
He'll probably have lots of money all the time from all of his adoring fans.
Yes.
But they still chose to say, even knowing that he still gets to breathe air,
mm-hmm.
you know, let him live. Let him live. It's not our place to take his life to.
And Levi, don't you think that's so bizarre that we know that he's going to have women coming out his ears here because he's a good-looking guy, just like Scott Peterson and the Menendez brothers. It just is disgusting,
mm-hmm.
right?
And remember, Euron Vandersloot got married when he was in a
That's
Peruvian
right.
prison after killing Stephanie Flores and
mm-hmm.
suspected in the murder of Natalie Holloway in Aruba. So there are women that I think are – you know, a few tacos short of a Mexican platter, to be blunt, that are attracted to those type of men. And then there, I think there's another camp of people that are maybe a little superficial, that think if somebody is handsome, if they work out a lot, if they look like somebody that could live next door to you, they don't want to accept that person could be a stone-cold killer. And I think those are the two camps of people that are supporting Chris Watts. And I think that he possibly lost a lot of them after today, because a lot of people were saying, oh, he really didn't want to plead not guilty. He wanted to plead not guilty. His attorney was pressuring him. Well, all of that flew out the window today when he couldn't even look at his own mother in the face.
I know.
That is guilt.
Trisha,
you mentioned
right
how
there.
Callous he was right after they went missing, when he was masquerading in the media as a father that was trying to find what happened to his missing family. Remember, he was wearing the North Carolina shirt where he's from, and the people were asking about him, and he was laughing and cracking up and smiling about it.
And if
and
you
that,
notice,
that tells you a lot right there.
It does. And Little Texans pointed this out to me. He's got his arms folded really tight, like he's keeping it all in. And then when they talk about the T-shirt, he's all happy and relaxed, and here come the arms out, you know, to his side and kind of moving around and all happy. And then, boom, they take it back to Shannon. There he goes. He's hugging himself, it looks like. So I would love Dr. Lillian Glass to take a look at him someday and really tell us what was going on there. It's pretty amazing. Well, Levi, who do you have coming up on your show on Crime and Scandal?
I have an interview with Cheryl McCollum. She's a crime scene investigator, and we're going to talk about the latest developments in Chris Watts. That's going to be uploaded tonight after midnight. It should be available on Crime and Scandal. You can go to iTunes or your Apple Podcast app. Just search Crime and Scandal. Subscribe, and you can get notified of every episode as soon as it's released. We're also on Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Crime and Scandal, and you'll get the podcast, and you can start listening. Me and you did an episode last week, Trisha, regarding Gypsy Rose. What we all thought was a little girl, really, she was in her 20s, and she was a fake cancer victim. Her mother was forcing her to pretend that she had cancer, and they teamed up. She teamed up with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend killed her Munchausen by proxy mom. And
there
a lot of people think that in that case, that is a victim. We put victim in quotation marks that really deserved to be examined and their character examined, because she had Munchausen by proxy and was abusing her own daughter in order to get donations and attention and sympathy. And we break down that case. The boyfriend was sentenced to life in prison after being found guilty, and Gypsy Rose Blanchard is serving 10 years in prison, and we go into that case. So that's on Crime and Scandal, my podcast.
Thank you, Levi. And I just want to say something about Cheryl McCollum. She is a friend of mine, a friend of Web Sleuths, and that woman has so much integrity, and she spends – I think pretty much all of her free time helping victims of crime. And along with Dr. Laura Petler, two incredible women who have, you know, just been through all kinds of stuff, but now they're as strong as ever and loved more than ever. And I hope she's listening to this, because we all love her immensely. Okay, Little Texans, what's coming up on your podcast? Oh, you don't have one, sorry.
I don't.
You're going to be on the forum all day tomorrow, and I want everybody to be nice to Little Texans, because she stays up till 1 and 2 in the morning most of the time and fixing things and getting things to run smoothly. So, Little Texans, I can't thank you enough. You are such an angel, and you've done so much to help Web Sleuth. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Trisha. It's easy to work for you. And
oh, thank you.
I think that we are also very blessed to have Levi as a member of Web Sleuth as well.
Absolutely. And the other mods, they're all a great group. So basically, we're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya here in just a little bit and probably go to bed. So, Levi, thank you for taking over with all these technical difficulties. I'd like to apologize to everybody. And Little Texans, thank you. We did miss Hitana, but she did have an emergency with a client, and we were going to have our member Baby Butterfly on, and she had an emergency as well, so we understand this. And the Thayers, Mr. Thayer was going to come on, but he's respecting Shannon's mother's request not to do any media, at least right here at the moment. So you guys really came in and took up the slack, and I really appreciate it. Next week, you know what? Depending on what happens in the crime world, that will depend on what we do. So join us next week for another edition of Blog Talk Radio, Web Sleuth Radio. Thank you so much, Levi and Little Texans, and we'll see you next time.